Hello, and welcome to I Am The Egg Pod with me, Chris Shaw. The Egg Pods take a jaunty stroll through Pepperland, discussing the Beatles and solo Beatle albums with a potpourri of delicious guests. In this episode, I'm joined by a musician, songwriter and producer who's produced and written for Simple Minds, Robbie Williams, Girls Aloud and the Pet Shop Boys, amongst many more. Owen Parker, hello.
Hello there.
Lovely to meet you.
And you, yes.
I think actually we are friends on Facebook. And it does amuse me because, like a lot of my friends, you get posts about, oh, look, this lovely cake I've made, or I've painted the shed. And your photos are of being on stage with Robbie Williams in front of hundreds of thousands of people. You've just returned from that, haven't you?
Yeah, we've 15 months. It started rehearsal September 2022, and it ended beginning of December or throughout December. So we did Australia at the end of last year. Yeah, it was amazing because I've never toured that much. I've been more of a studio bod. I did Billy Bragg in America, but that was like 7 weeks. So the longest I'd really done was that. So it was brilliant. I often wonder if I do lose some friends because it seems a little bit braggarty, but I'm doing it for the See Your Memories thing.
Yeah.
Basically, that if it all ends, I can either sort of taunt myself that that's what I used to do, or smile and go, oh, at least I've done that.
Yeah.
A sort of glass half full sort of thing. But it's funny, yeah, those sort of posts or pictures of my dog will get loads of likes.
Yeah.
But if I get cross about the post office or something, two likes, you know. So
head to Twitter.
You know. Yeah.
So first of all, tell me, when did you first discover the Beatles?
But around the time of becoming sentient, I think my folks had a handful of 7 inches. There, I Want to Hold Your Hand is very prominent as a core memory. And then they had every album from Hard Day's Night to the White Album. And then it stopped. And I've been trying to work backwards on that because they're not around anymore. So I looked at when Abbey Road came out, and I think my sister, which is the second child, had just been born. So either music had gone out the window or there wasn't much money or something, that it stopped at the White Album. So I don't really know Please Please Me, Beatles for Sale with the Beatles, because it begins at Hard Day's Night. I got Abbey Road in my teens, and that it always feels like that's always been in my life. But playing I Want to Hold Your Hand in my bedroom, and especially playing Sgt. Pepper's Playing with Space Lego, is everything.
Yes.
That's the whole of my childhood. Basically, yeah.
Superb. So tell me the album you've picked today.
I have chosen Love.
Wow. I'm guessing with your background in recording studios, you'd have a lot to say on this. Why did you pick this?
Well, have you noticed some people will knock it? I think the tide might have turned the other way a bit now. I suppose there's a vague Partridge, I'd say the best of the Love album.
Yes.
You know, but there's lots of reasons for me. I've got the vinyl here, which I got for Christmas for my daughter when she was 7 months old. Very forward thinking of her.
Absolutely.
And it was one of the first new vinyl of the new wave of vinyl that I got because I'm still heavily CDs at that point. I'm not a vinyl bore, but I do enjoy vinyl, and I've been buying a lot of vinyl. Plus, then buying the CD of it, it was the first time they really took a leap in quality that we'd been living with the 87, 88 remasters. The first wave of CD reissues, there's certainly no computer jiggery pokery. Hard Day's Night, start, stop, maybe put a bit of top end on it, I don't know. And then the one album is obviously, that's different, but I still think is that pre-computer? It's 2000, 1999, isn't it? But it's not Giles. So this seems to me to be the revolution of hearing cellos that you'd never heard before and it all coming out, but then in this amazing hodgepodge and drawing on the kind of Jay-Z, you know, the whole sample-led thing, and obviously it being for Cirque du Soleil. So it had a reason, the Love Show. And I just, when it hit moments, I just, like the beginning of Here Comes the Sun, with that bit, were just magical for me. Other bits, which I'll come to, that did, there's only one bit I really think doesn't land. But I just found it exciting and so invigorating. And then it led to then the remasters of the others, which I've devoured and I love, especially the White Album and Sgt. Pepper's remasters. So yeah, it was just very exciting. And as we say, and we always quote, it's more Beatles. It was like a sensory overload of more Beatles. You know, it wasn't just, here's a new song.
Yes, absolutely. This was released on the 20th November 2006. And as you say, yeah, it's an album of remixes and mashups by Giles Martin.
Mm-hmm.
And his father, George, it was actually George, would turn out to be his final role as a producer.
Yes.
And obviously the inception of using the Beatles' music was for the Cirque du Soleil production via George. He was friends with the founder, Guy Laliberté, I think you pronounce it. But obviously it was approved by the surviving Beatles members, Paul and Ringo, who both loved it, as well as Yoko and Olivia doing the estates of John and George. And yeah, it's 130 elements of Beatles recordings remixed or mashed up. You mentioned the Jay-Z DJ Danger Mouse Grey album. Mm-hmm. Mashup, which was one of the big things. I was so into the mashup scene in the early noughties.
Yep.
And there was a website, Get Your Bootleg On, which had one of the best ones was Go Home Productions.
Ah, I've got some, I think, from the dark days of LimeWire.
Oh, yes.
And I've still got an iTunes thing with Go Home Productions as the artist.
Yeah.
That will be, was there a Monkees Beatles mashup,
the famous Paperback one? Believer, which was...
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Vocals from one yeah. on the backing of another. I was a member of this, and I was used to be at CCC, and I did Revolved, which was the whole of the Revolver album mashed up with other artists and other tracks.
Oh, wow.
And
great.
I think Giles might have heard it.
Ah, I think so, yes.
I reckon. It was before this, and yeah, Cracked yeah, yeah, Pepper yeah. and things like that.
There's nothing you can know that is known. Nothing you can see that isn't shown. No way you can be that isn't where you're meant to be. It's easy.
But it was a definite scene going on. Freelance Hellraiser, yeah. who Paul later worked with on Twin Freaks, which is a yeah. great album, if you haven't heard that as well. But yeah, there was a lot of that going on, and there was suddenly a lot of, well, yeah, why can't we remix and mess around with these songs? And yeah, thankfully they're all up for it.
Yeah.
So it made number 3 in the UK, number 4 in the US. Giles Martin won 2 Grammys in 2008, Best Compilation Soundtrack Album and Best Surround mm-hmm. Sound Album. And what I love about this, it was first publicly played on Virgin Radio by Eggpod favourite guest, Jeff Lloyd, who basically played the whole album uninterrupted because he wanted younger fans to experience what it was like to hear an album premiere.
Did he lock the door, sort of Shawshank Redemption style? Yeah.
What a genius thing to do.
That's wonderful. Yes.
Because the world is round, it turns me on.
So, should we start with track one? Because...
Yeah, so I've been consulting the complete Beatles recording sessions. So it's common knowledge that, the original of this, it's the three of them triple track, so there's 9 of them.
Yeah.
And on this, is there Birds and Wildlife?
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if Giles added them to mask the headphone spill of the Moog or the electric harpsichord.
Could be.
Possibly.
Yes.
Because if that's coming through, obviously now this sort of the AI bot plugins could just remove that. It sets up the whole album because there's a very slow reverse note in it. It's Day in the Life backwards, right?
Yes.
But down a tone to be in D, because the end of Day in the Life is in the key of E. So it's literally just the... I'll see if I can play this. So that's the end chord. I took the end of Day in the Life from Sgt. Pepper's and just reversed it. So this is not from...
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. That's literally this. the original one, just reversed.
Yes.
And it's so amazing. It's just such a simple thing. There's a lot of that going on with the soundscaping on this record. And why not? Because it just works to blend things in and out. And reverse reverbs, where you then put a huge reverb, reverse that reverb, and then have that. It's quite a used a lot in the 80s, the Trevor Horn productions. And
yes.
One of my favourite bits is Whispers and Moans off Woodface, Crowded House, Mitchell Froom production. Yeah. I wake up. Yes. It does that into Wake Up. It grabs the word of Wake Up. It's an old technique, but just it's. I'm using it a lot at the moment in 2024, and it always just makes something sound expensive. It's like, oh, and it's you don't even have to turn the tape round like you used to have to.
Oh,
it's just a flick of a button sort of thing. So yeah, I love the fact it starts with Because. It's understated. Did you ever see Love?
No, I can't afford that.
Well, I was in Las Vegas for 3 weeks.
Yes,
right, in 2019, doing a residency with Robbie Williams, and I thought, I'm going to leave it till the last week. And we had a day off, and I thought, I'm going to go for that day. And it was July the 4th, and there was no productions anywhere, and I blew it.
No.
But apart from that, yeah, it's fine.
Yeah.
So I didn't see it, and it was right there under my nose.
Posters looked good.
Yes.
But I do like this. I mean, the Giles does slow it down slightly, so you get a bit of discordant pauses. But yeah, the birds on it. They were the ones used in the World Wildlife Fund version of Across the Universe.
Which is one of my favourite versions because it's on the Beatles ballads, that
yes,
version.
Yes, rarities, yeah.
Yeah, because I had the Beatles ballads on cassette and I remember going on holiday once. Which is the one with the Scrubs on backing vocals, is it that one?
Yes.
Yes, which is, again, just a lovely story. It's just,
yeah.
come and sing on a... Yeah.
But they've reappeared, haven't they, on the recent Let It Be box set on Across the Universe. You can. It's really, really quiet, but they are there if you filter out some of the tracks. Gaylene Pease and Lizzie Bravo are there back on the on the full orchestrated version.
Yeah.
Oh, they sound lovely. Bless them.
Yeah.
So that closing piano chord goes into Get Back.
So, yeah, the reason it's down from E to D is because Hard Day's Night chord, it's the original chord of Hard Day's Night, which has got the D in the bass, hence why they've moved it down. Yeah,
yeah. So it closes piano chord from Day in the Life, opening chord of Hard Day's Night, and then you've got the drum and guitar solos from the end, bit of percussion from Sgt. Pepper, reprise, and the screams from...
Where's the cheering from? What's the cheer?
That's
is
from
that
Hollywood
Bowl.
Was
that?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, great. Well, that's one of the first Beatles albums I bought because it was music for pleasure. And so I could afford it. It was in Woolworths. So I think it was $2.99 along with the, what were they called? Rock and Roll Music 1, Rock and Roll Music 2?
Yeah, the red and the blue ones, weren't they?
And they were music for pleasure as well.
Yeah, you had a whole raft of them. George Harrison, Dark Horse, Best of George Harrison, Blast From Your Past by Ringo, Mind Games by John. Yeah.
Mind Games was on music for pleasure.
Yeah.
So would these have been Klein endorsed?
No, these were just budget.
So were they later 70s?
Yeah, these were all early 80s.
Right, okay.
But yeah, very affordable. Basically, that's how one of the first albums I got was Rock and Roll 1 and Rock and Roll 2.
Same
my
here.
Sister bought them because they were so cheap. So
yes.
That's him sorted.
Well, I remember reading the notes on the back by George Martin on Hollywood Bowl and him saying that his daughter or a child, I think it was his daughter, said, "Oh, Dad, the Beatles, that's the band you work with. Were they as big as the Bay City Rollers?" And that always just sat in my head to talk from, because I've got friends who've played with us, you know, with the Bay City Rollers. And I remember the perception of George Martin's daughter, the Beatles were as big as the Bay City. Yeah. Blah, blah, blah.
But why not?
Yeah, absolutely. And they were.
For that week.
And we've got Sliding Strings from Day in the Life.
Yeah.
And then it's pretty much straight ahead Get Back. I don't know about you, I always liked Get Back, but now I love it as it's the title track of one of my favourite films of all time.
Yes.
Because the whole Get Back three-parter, it's now and that moment with him at the bass, summoning it from the ether. It's gone from a 7 out of 10 to at least a 9 out of 10 Beatles song for me because of that. And it's that resonance of it being the soundtrack to that film.
Yeah, my biggest takeaway from Get Back was that I now really enjoy Dig It because of the footage.
Let It Be was one of the first. I bought Let It Be in Crawley R Price because obviously I had the gap of Abbey Road was missing and Let It Be was missing. And I do remember playing it a lot and it being quite disappointing because it is, Dig It.
It's not great, in the perspective of the movie with Heather running around. I love it.
Yeah, of course. And then if we got Pepper reprise drums over the roads, over the Billy Preston solo, are they sneaking in?
Yeah.
And then more Atmos and then more Day in the Life strings because they're atonal, the Day in the Life strings. You can put them over anything.
Yeah.
Because that's what George had told them to get from there to there within this amount of bars and take your own time to the string players, which some dealt with quite well and others probably really badly. That we need to be told what we do. Yeah. I haven't studied for 40 years to have an imagination. That's cool. But there was kind of a sense of that.
So then we move on to Glass Onion.
Yes.
And there's all sorts of Easter eggs in here.
So Glass Onion, Hello, Goodbye. You've got the piccolo solo from Penny Lane. Mm-hmm. And there's a nice little trick with that, like with reverse reverb. It's panned hard left and then hard right. Mm. And then into the outro of Glass Onion, again with a huge reverse reverb.
Yeah.
Into the next one. Are there other tracks?
Well, you've got the, on Glass Onion, you've also got the, from Things We Said Today, you've got the jigga-ding.
The jigga-ding. Yeah, the A minor, splangs.
Yeah, very subtly done.
Yes.
But you think this was going on back, people had said about Now and Then. This was effectively doing it back in 2006.
Yes. Yeah. I checked the tempos of some of them to see whether he'd gridded. So they're obviously not on click track because it's the Beatles. But for ease of... So if you've got a track in 100 BPM and a track in 102, you could just move them together. But it's not. So he's obviously created what's called a tempo map. So then the other thing he brings in, that then meets that. So then that's being manipulated to be in time. But I'm so glad he did that and didn't straight jacket it.
Yes.
So that it's regimented to a thing. I mean, it's a fascinating thing, the whole click track versus not. The producer Steve Albini always said that playing with a click track is like driving with the police in your rearview mirror. And so for all the gigs I do, because they're huge with screens and multimedia and pyrotechnics and all that, we are all gridded because it has to be, but it doesn't make it nerve-wracking when, because I start the show and Let Me Entertain You, and I get 1, 2, 3, 4, and I have to play it as well as I can in time.
On your
own. There's not a kind of sense of, no, we'll go around again, sort of thing. It's you're in, you're off, and that's it. And this kind of voice of doom always counting in your ears that you get used to, but you never fully. But they certainly weren't on in-ear monitoring and click tracks on Savile Row roof.
So then we get the backward R's from Eleanor Rigby into Eleanor Rigby with a little transition with Julia.
Yes. I've always been fascinated by George Martin and the financial side of the Beatles, because obviously he was on a wage and it wasn't great, but then there must have been a deal at some point. But my thing with Eleanor Rigby and I'm the Walrus is I think that warrants songwriting, because those songs are so much to do with the arrangement. I think it would cause a problem because an arrangement's an arrangement. But if you think Eleanor Rigby, you might, you do think the story and the loneliness and la la la. But it's that arrangement. I mean, the wonderful songs, but they're nowhere near as wonderful without his arrangements.
No.
I mean, publishing is a thorny old thing. And I was told very on by a producer that songwriting is literally top line and melody. So if you're taking someone's melody and sculpting chords and arrangement around it, you're not liable to be cut in. Depends on the discretion. And there are things along the line where I have provided chords for where I haven't been added in, and sometimes I have been added in. But orchestral arrangers arrange and get their fee, and in most instances, points on the record. Like, I don't think he should have had a credit for yesterday, because it's nice, but it's very workaday.
Yeah.
It's just right for it. It's, you know, just, a small section. But whereas I do think Eleanor Rigby and Walrus are the essence of the song themselves.
Especially I'm the Walrus. If you listen to the version, which you can hear online, without the orchestra, it's quite a scrappy song. It's brilliant.
Is it on anthology?
It's quite
scrappy.
Yes, yeah, there's an early version. Yeah. But then you can also hear online as well, just the orchestration. And it's as rich and as crucial to the song as anything else. It's a key part of the song. And yeah, I agree. Yeah, put him on as a songwriting credit.
And I also love how the strings are not banging time on the Waits at the Window line, but they're perfect. Like, computers, Pro Tools, etc. are wonderful, but there's a tendency to make things perfect in the past 20, 30 years, and imperfections have soul. I've just caught myself saying that, but like the wrong bass note in Sexy Sadie at the end, where Paul's gone the wrong way, and then it's like, but great, that's that. What, you know, why would you take that out? It's just, he corrects himself, and then we've got that a moment of him imagining, laughing and smiling, and go, yeah, sorry, John, I thought we were going to that bit, so yeah.
I think I Am the Walrus on this. It's such a good mix. John, it sounds so rich, John's voice. Usually when it gets to sitting in an English garden, it goes into mono on the original ones.
Yes.
Just
right, okay.
Just so you can get all of the radio stuff in. But this sits all the way through, and it's a much rockier version. Sitting in an English garden, waiting for
the sun. Here they are, the Beatles!
I Am the Walrus segues into more Hollywood Bowl screams into I Want to Hold Your Hand.
Yes.
Shorter version.
Okay, so Hollywood Bowl again. There's just a slight arrangement change, isn't there? Because it's an AABA song. I went on, the wonderful Pete Perfidis asked me to go on his Soho radio show once to talk about middle eights. And we had a whole load of middle eights we were talking about, and it was offered to Twitter to vote for the best middle eight of all time. And we can work it out one. And I didn't have the heart to say on it, it's not a middle, it's a B section, because the Life is Very Short is a B section.
Yeah.
I think personally, middle eights only come once, and the great middle eights are, well, Huey Lewis and the News, The Power of Love, brilliant middle eight. New York Minute, Don Henley. Senses Working Overtime.
Oh, yes.
XTC. I mean, it's a middle 49.
Yeah.
It goes on forever. I think 49.
Yeah.
But I think so they've left off the second A of I Want to Hold Your Hand to get to the B section. Basically, that's the only thing. But as I say, I Want to Hold Your Hand. I was lucky enough to record in Studio 2 when I was 25, and everyone went off for dinner, and I just sat and played the piano. And I've never really tried meditation, but that's the closest I got, because I closed my eyes and I could see the four of them.
Wow.
Just, yeah, and I wasn't even playing I Want to Hold Your Hand. It's not a great piano song, but that is such an awakening for me, that song. And Lennon's gnarly part is so perfect. When I was at college, and for a few years afterwards, I was in the Cheatles and I was George. Right. I wasn't a very fastidious George because I was also really into Steve Lukather at Toto at the time.
Oh.
So they'd be these great big LA lead sounds with delays and choruses and stuff.
Yeah.
But we do all the early stuff. So I have experienced wearing a wig, playing a Brannigan's or a Chicago Rock Cafe in Cardiff, and playing I Want to Hold Your Hand. And the beauty of these songs, the arrangements are just for four instruments and three vocals. They're just they're nothing like it. Baby, you can drive my car. Yes, I'm gonna be a star.
Next, Well, probably what I consider a highlight, if you're looking at in terms of mashups, we've got Drive My Car, The Word, and What You're Doing.
Yes. So we've got Brass from Savoy Truffle. Mm. I've got like a cheap version of the Jackson thing. So of the... Yeah, so we can hear that there. And that actual bit is from the Coffee Desert line. And then we get the Taxman solo.
Yeah.
And again, I checked the click track, hasn't been gridded. And credit to my friend Alex, who said there's a very likeable Stars on 45 quality to this, which I think resonates with anyone who grew up with Stars on 45. Yes. Keep on doing the sky.
When you get no reply.
Yeah, yeah. Listen.
In a slightly Nordic accent, which I always liked.
Oh, were they? And was that who they, who'd redone it? Yeah. Oh, wow. Okay. But yeah, it rattles along this. I'd love to know what they're doing at this point. Famously, I didn't get to see the show. But it feels like it's really, it, obviously with this one, there'll be, yeah, things are really motoring along. No pun intended, obviously. Yeah. Yeah, it's wonderful.
But you've got, all sorts. You've got the ahs from Helter Skelter.
Yeah.
And also a few keyboards from Lucy in the Sky. And it's just the end. I really like it. It's the word of love. Beep, 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 yeah. And with that Savoy Truffle brass as well. I think it's just...
Yeah.
It encompasses what mashups as a term
were. Yeah, absolutely.
But then we have a bit more backwards reversing, Tambura Drone, Gunik Nus.
Well, I've reversed it here. I've just reversed it back the other way, just so we can... Which bit it is, it's just literally... So there is reverse stuff as well. So there's stuff going forward, and then obviously... Yeah.
Lovely.
It's funny.
Yeah. I've just realised, actually, you could almost pronounce the song Night Nurse.
Night Nurse. Yeah. And so, yeah, it's the Tanpura.
Tanpura, yeah.
Yeah.
Going into, yeah, as you say, the opening strings of Something.
Something in the way she moves attracts me like no other lover.
The only real difference is that Ringo's out for the first two bars. Have you done the Jeff Emerick book?
Yes.
Here, There and Everywhere. Yeah. I mean, I loved it, but I found it overridingly, he was so much Macca's guy. It was wonderful, but do you know the work experience story of Jeff Emerick, which is just brilliant that, yeah, he goes to do work experience at EMI Studios, Abbey Road. At the end of the day, is it Norman? Norman says, why are you going? You want to hang around? There's a band coming down from Liverpool. You might want to check them out. And that was the Love Me Do recording. But I did find, because he's clearly Paul's guy, he seemed wary of John, didn't have much to say about Ringo, but I was really down on George. Mm. Just saying, another terrible solo from George. Another do-la-la. And obviously they rubbed each other up the wrong way a bit. And maybe George's... Yeah, obviously, clearly by Get Back, we know what George thinks of Paul. But he did compliment him on this solo, but he also said that he had to do it live in Studio One whilst the orchestra were being done at the same time. The pressure of that's brilliant. Mm. And it's a beautiful, beautiful solo.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
up the, for, and people say, oh, George Harrison did. No, that, and it's got taste, but it's got flair and... I don't want to say jazzy bits, but it has. It's got chromatic bits, and it's something as well. It's what Frank Sinatra called the best love song of the last. Was it 50 years?
Yeah,
that he said that
by John and Paul.
Yeah. Thanks, but yeah.
But it does. I do like the way it transitions into Blue Jay Way, you've got little hints of Nowhere Man thrown in there.
Yes.
And it does set the mood for the next track, which is a macabre Victorian circus.
Yes.
You've also got laughter circus sound effects into Being for the Benefit of Mr. Kite and I Want You, She's So Heavy and Helter Skelter.
For the benefit of Mr. Kite, there will be a show tonight on trampoline. The Hendersons will all be there. Late of Pablo Frank is there. What a scene. Over men and horses, hoops and garters, lastly through a hogshead of real fire. In this way, Mr. K will
challenge. Ah, yeah. I've got the poster there. I didn't get the expensive reproduction one.
Yeah.
But my wife found that online for like 30 quid and I love it. So, and obviously, so have you been to where it was in Sevenoaks? If that's...
Noel Park.
Where the shop he bought it from.
Oh, no.
Do we know where that was? That was in Sevenoaks.
Yeah, it's when they were doing the...
Because when they're filming on Noel Park...
Yes.
...that he bought the kite poster.
Yeah.
I think... With the advent of the CD and streaming and not wanting to go, oh, because vinyl is making a wonderful comeback. But it feels like it's a bookend of side one for me, this. And it excites me so much because the eight-year-old me playing with Space Lego is coming to an end. I'm going to have to turn it around. And because I'm eight, I probably will skip track one of side two. But I'll get it in my 20s. I'll suddenly go, George, no, I get it now. The eight-year-old me couldn't deal with it. So, yeah, and we get the horse neighs from Good Morning and Cry Baby Cry and Piggy's bits, don't we?
Yeah, Piggy's, it's a laughter, which is really spooky. It was like, ho, 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 which was never actually used in Piggy's. It was an outtake from that. But it's really spooky. Yeah, but the transition into I Want You, She's So Heavy is fantastic.
Yeah.
And it really highlights Billy Preston.
Yes.
And tonight, Mr. Kite is coming the bill.
That motif, which doesn't come out, especially on my old Abbey Road copy, that's where the remastering of all this has really come through. Things like that, the Hammonds, and your lost cellos and lost bits of BVs as well, sort of thing. I Want You, She's So Heavy is always, it's astonishing. It's I wonder if you did meet an alien and they'd say, well, come on, play me one John Lennon song. And you go, how about this? Because he really does sum him up.
Yes, yeah.
It's quintessentially Lennon.
And he's just outrageous what he's doing on there.
Yeah, yeah.
And then into using bits of Helter Skelter, Paul thrown in there, screaming and yelping. Just makes such... Hats off to Giles for thinking, hang on, stick that on the end of Benefit of Mr. Kite. I don't know where the thinking came from. Maybe he had a list of songs that are in the same key. I don't know.
Yeah.
Help, I need somebody. Not just anybody. Help! You know I need someone. Help!
So then we have Help and Blackbird segueing into Yesterday.
Help's pretty much as is, isn't it? It's
again
back to my Cheetle days. That was a lot of fun. Although the Paul wasn't left-handed, so as George, we'd sort of get in the way of each other when we try and share a mic. I just sort of go sideways on. But Blackbird's down a tone. The original's in G, and it's in F. Just to segue nicely into Yesterday. Although, funnily enough, Yesterday's played in G, but tuned down two steps. And that's how... With both of those songs, when people cover them, they don't quite sound right. When I first learned Blackbird as a teenager, I did it in normal tuning, unaware that it was open G tuning that Donovan will probably say was his idea. And you get close, but there's just sort of clangs and, you know, the sort of chimes of open strings that isn't quite right. And then, into Yesterday. It's funny, the Air Studios, they've got the string arrangement on the wall. I've only been to Air Studios once. I was doing something for Marmite, an advert for Marmite.
Wow.
And it then turned into what the advert for Marmite was going to be, Phil Tufnell singing a punk version of Two Little Boys.
Right. So far, so bad.
Makes sense. Yep. So I mocked it all up here. gotta pay them bills.
Yes.
And then it was like, well, we need to get Phil in. I just presumed Phil would be able to do punk because that's a nice root one, and he's kind of quite a, you know, punky, fun, avuncular character, blah, blah, blah. But then the guy producing it said, oh, yeah, by the way, we're doing the vocal session. We've got Air Studios. And I was equally delighted and mortified at the same time going, all right, so I finally get, so yeah, I'm producing a session at Air Studios. Yeah. It's a novelty version of Two Little Boys punk, done in a punk style, sung by Phil, the cat, Tufnell. But being there was brilliant. Oh, and yeah. Yes, we weren't in the main big, we were in the second room. Mm. But yes, so there's my Air Studios. Yes. It's not quite a clang, but I'll go for it anyway.
So you are yeah, pretty well the fifth Beatle then. There you go.
I'll take that. Oh, and then our version was played on Test Match Special in the View from the Boundary to Rolf Harris, who hated it. So that's even sweeter.
Well done.
Thank you.
As you can't, you go tuning, but it's alright. That is, I think it's not too bad. Let me take you down, cause I'm going to Strawberry Fields. Nothing is real, and nothing to get hung about.
Next, we have a song, and I remember hearing this, it was debuted on good old Tell, Terry Wogan.
Oh, yes.
Mrs. Wogan will enjoy this one. Yeah. Yeah, he played the whole Strawberry Fields Forever, and yeah. I remember driving, I had to pull the car over, because I was so blown away.
From this version, yeah, because the double A side is, I think that's the one I'd save in the fire. My parents did have that. This is one, back to the whole thing of bringing things out. And we all know the story of the fusing of the two and the earth basically making it so you slow one down and speed one up, that it meets in the middle, you know, it was destined to be. And then we throw in quite a lot of brass section from Sergeant Pepper's, the In My Life solo, which took me a while to, because I had to play that once in the Gentles. And it was really tricky till I realised that George Martin had played it half the speed and then sped it up, which is how it sounds more harpsichordy, but it's actually a piano, but it's the speeding up that gives it that. And then Penny Lane solo again, and then Piggies. Chris Thomas played that, didn't he?
He did, yes.
Yeah. Obviously, I think people in the know who Chris Thomas is, but I think he's possibly the producer with the widest collection of credits over the most amount of decades.
Yeah.
That he produced, without credit, Birthday, Happiness is a Warm Gun, played harpsichord on Piggies, Mellotron on Continuing Story, piano and Long, Long, Long Savoy Truffle, then produced five Roxy Music albums, mixes Dark Side of the Moon, then produces Nevermind the Bollocks, and then Back to the Egg three years later, then Brass in Pocket Era Pretenders, and then what I think is Elton John's last great song, that's why they call it the blues, and then In Excess Kicks, like Need You Tonight, which was quite futuristic and sort of digital and sounding. Time, yeah. And then Common People for Pulp in the 90s. You know, has there been a more varied producer? I mean, Rick Rubin would claim he is, but I'm suspicious he just sits cross-legged in nice rooms, letting the talent do all the work. do you know what I mean? But yeah, but the fact he's there at that age, where was George Martin at that point? Because he's acting producer. Obviously, he's never going to get his name on.
Yeah,
he was. But George has had enough.
Yeah, he went away on holiday.
Right. I bumped into, going to a gig recently, Don Powell from Slade.
Oh, wow.
In an airport lounge, who told me the first time Slade came to London, they went to Abbey Road, and he said they're in the corridor listening at Studio 2, because the Beatles are in there, and then they heard someone coming, so they sort of scuttled off and pretended they were just walking down the corridor as per normal, and they saw George Martin come out and put his hands on his head and go, ah, and walk off. And it was like, wow.
Yeah.
You saw that. So I'd imagine that's around
yeah,
this time.
Yeah, it's probably the day.
Hence why,
yeah.
why does Chris Thomas have to sit in on these things? Because I think George had one too many moments.
Oh, bless
possibly.
Him. Yeah, but you've got, well, I mean, essentially the thing about this song is the fact that it is the whole evolution of the song in one song, isn't it? You've got the demo, yes. take one, leading all the way up to take 26, and then yeah. you've got the craziness with all the little sections thrown in.
Wonderful.
Then another, well, this is a sort of, not a single, but they made a little promo video for it, which is very psychedelic. Within You, Without You, Tomorrow Never Knows.
Yes, and as I alluded to, the eight-year-old me couldn't deal with Within You, Without You. But that now, I especially back to George's arrangement, the string arrangement's extraordinary, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
And the whole vibe of it. And also with Tomorrow Never Knows, back to Jeff Emerick, there's this brilliant story of it. And that was his first day engineering for them because he went off. He had been tape op on early albums
yeah.
down in the depths of Abbey Road, sweating because the machines were so hot. But he went off and did other things and came back. And his first thing he worked on was Tomorrow Never Knows. And the men in white coats, they positioned the mics. But he went down onto the floor at Studio 2 and took the Beatles drum head off Ringo's Ludwig kit. And shoved a mic and says, hey, we're going to get much better bass drum, kick drum sound if we put it inside. And people freaking out, going, you yeah. don't touch them, you're going to get sacked. And then he slammed it through whatever he put it through, the Fairchild or whatever, and got that drum sound. And then at the same time, George is going, I want to sound like the Dalai Lama. So they put his voice through the Leslie, another thing that the men in white coats have been in, no, but that doesn't go through there. And so that's not a bad first day's work.
It's all right.
It's revolutionary kick drum sound and creating that vocal sound for Tomorrow Never Knows. The backward cymbals from Penny Lane. I always think Penny Lane when I hear backward cymbals. It could
so.
Be from anything.
Yeah, it's
right,
really
okay.
hard to distinguish that there's some elements in here that are so... And no one's deconstructed it yet online, which I think...
There is, weirdly, researching this, there's not a deep dive on this record. There's the no. there's the Wikipedia... And I would have thought this would have been ripe for Beatleheads all over the world to go, you know, actually, you can hear, yeah, that from this and this from that sort of thing. But
there's
not.
A few reviews from the time in the music press. But again, they're...
Yeah.
Yeah, you at that point, you know, you would literally have to use your ears. There wasn't really the equipment to... Or the
yeah.
inclination, I think, is more to the point.
Yes, of course,
through it.
Yeah.
It's just you experience yeah. it as an experience, don't you, the whole thing?
Yeah.
Then Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. We've got the panning, mm-hmm. ding, 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 ding.
Yeah.
Which Giles would eventually use for the actual remix on the Pepper yep. Box. So he clearly liked the
right.
idea.
Is, excuse my ignorance, is that a Macca part like the intro to Strawberry Fields? Is that him playing that melody?
Yes.
That is,
yeah.
yes. On the Lowry?
Yes.
Not a Hammond, yeah. Because yeah. I had to, for Blue Jay Way... I had to double check that because they used Lowry a lot, but that was definitely a Hammond on Blue Jay Way. Mm. So I imagine there was a Hammond always there. They must have just favoured the Lowry sometimes.
Yeah.
It didn't. Sometimes the Lowry doesn't sound as Hammondy as a Hammond does, if that makes any sense. You can, maybe a bit,
it does.
You know, like that is more twinkly.
Yeah.
That's, yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, you've got elements, you've got horns and guitars from Sgt. Pepper. And the clavioline from Baby, You're a Rich Man.
Yes.
Which is quite an interesting use.
And I looked at clavioline. Is it more like an Anders Martin? Is it like an early form of... So we're just pre getting the Moog. I could still say Moog.
I know.
Moog. Sorry, Moog. Sorry, Robert Moog's family. But it's spelled Moog.
Jacob Rees-Moog.
Yes. I mean, what would be his favourite Beatles album?
Oh, let's. Yeah, I don't even put him in. I'm not even going to use that. I don't want his name.
I'd like to be under the sea in an octopus's garden in the shade.
But yeah, it closes with the strings from Goodnight. Ah, into the next track.
Which always get me. Fusing these two together is a bit much for me. And is there anything more lovely than George helping Ringo write this in Get Back?
Oh, yeah.
It's just so lovely. Lovely Rita drum fill.
Mm.
Sun King guitar riff.
Yeah.
I was very, very lucky to work with Peter Green for a couple of years.
Wow.
And he was such a... wasn't cut out for the music industry because he's such a nice, such a beautiful human being. And he was taken advantage of a lot of his life financially, blah, blah, blah. But he was in a studio that where I grew up. It was where I cut my teeth. And I popped round once in a break from university, and the studio owner said, I'm afraid you can't come in. We've got Peter Green in here. Call me in an hour. So I called the thing. I went, oh, Owen, hi. Yeah, listen, you play bass, don't you? And then an hour later, I'm playing Black Magic Woman opposite Peter, and he's still very wow. He's coming out of he's quite medicated and blah 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 blah. And then I got to know him, and then once you start to work out that Albatross informed Sun King, and you hear them talking about, is it Lennon talking about him on Get Back saying, oh, he's great, he looks great, and he's got this great big long kind of, you know, the clothes he's wearing and all that sort of stuff. But then Peter, because he had given his money away before anyway, he wanted to go house hunting. And my friend had come down to visit, who was the John in the Cheatles, my friend Julian. Okay. So we're John and George, and he goes, I want to go and see a house. And I said, well, Julian, he had his Cheatle transit van, E-Reg, knackered Cheatle transit van, Ginsters and crap all over the front thing.
Yeah.
But he just had some new Cheatles pictures done. So Peter gets in the middle, and I can hear Julian saying to me, oh, yeah. Peter Green in the Cheatles transit. And he gets in, he picks up these promo pictures of them all with their 15 quid Beatle wigs. I'd left by this point. And he said, he picks it up.
Had you met a conceptual artist?
Yes. But he said, he picks up these promo pictures of Julian's band, my previous band, and says, is this your band? And he went, oh, yes, Peter. We're called the Cheatles. Yeah, Beatles. Yeah, I like Beatles. Like a bit. Love George's playing. Yeah, love George's playing. That's all he said. Didn't say they came backstage to see me when I'd done a gig in 1967. Yeah. Actually, Sun King on Abbey Road is informed by my song. None of that.
Yeah.
And this is someone who knew them, wow, sort of thing. And just so, such the opposite of, you know.
Yeah.
Not even a humble brag in him. Just humble. No bragging at all.
I remember, I've seen a few interviews with him, and he always does come across as sort of Brian Wilson naivety.
Yes.
But in a knowing and lovely way.
Knowing and lovely. He'd said to me once, thing is with acid, he said, when you're on it, you've got all the answers, and then you wake up the next day and you've forgotten what the question is.
Hmm. Yeah. Oh, bless him.
So,
Ops vs. God. You've also got a few ad-libs from Polythene Pam with John going, great.
Have you?
Great.
Oh, right.
Fab.
Okay.
Sensational.
Yep.
Which again, you wouldn't have really heard. You can just about pick out the grades on Polythene Pan.
And where's Obla D? I couldn't find Obla D. I knew it was in there.
Oh, I can't. I don't know. I couldn't find.
Or
it.
Wikipedia said it was.
Oh well, don't listen to that.
Okay. Obla D is one that I actually prefer the anthology version of.
Yes,
I love his kind of the vocal on it. So just lovely and light and fun.
Yeah.
And I'm not a granny music knocker anyway. I love Paul's granny music, especially the 8-year-old me loved it.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's not on this track. Let's say it's not on this track. Who knew Wikipedia could be wrong?
So the final chord of this segues into the opening riff from Sun King. You've got those beautiful ahs, which lead into the next track, Lady Madonna.
percussion from Why Don't We Do It in the Road? At the top. Into, is it Ronnie Scott sax solo?
Yeah.
And then the I Want You Hammond solo again.
This, for me, is the nadir of any song officially released under the Beatles' name. Because when it goes into the guitar riff from Hey Bulldog, it's out of tune.
Well, I tried to tune Clapton solo using Melodyne, which is a plug-in to move stuff. I didn't manage to. It's awful, isn't it?
It's painful.
Oh, where is it? I'll show you what I tried to do.
Oh. It's not good. And it's,
I mean, and how did that get through?
I don't know. Because then when it transitions from Hey Bulldog back into Lady Madonna, it's even more jarring. Because it's slightly out. I don't know. Surely, I don't know how that got through with two Martins having the ears.
I know. Especially when you're about to go into the intro to Here Comes the Sun, which is just one of the most magical mashup moments I've ever heard.
Oh, yes.
Out the back of, I don't know. I mean, I struggle with Clapton now. Anyway, after I had my booster, COVID booster, I went a bit mad and burnt a couple of Clapton vinyl records in my garden. I just found out he'd sued some woman in Germany for selling something on eBay that was unauthorized or something like that. Allegedly, and also there was someone on Twitter who's fascinated by Eric Clapton's bookshelf. That when he does interviews, and they've taken a deep dive on every book he owns behind him, and how dull they all are. I mean, it's not. I'm a big cricket fan, but he seems to be. That's all he's got in his life is cricket, and he's got two editions of like a Who's Who that the person's checked that he's not even in. So he's it might not be Who's Who, but something like that, some encyclopedia of the most important artists of something, and he's not in either of them. But someone has taken it upon themselves to take a deep dive on Eric. I never was that bothered by While My Guitar Gently Weeps, and we'll get on. That's obviously coming up. I much prefer the version on Love. And I don't even know it's because I didn't know at the age of eight that Clapton had said those things in Coventry in 1977. No.
No.
Actually, the 24 nights, I was really into that. I tried to go to that, but I couldn't get tickets when I was a teenager. I saw him at Nebworth, actually, in 1990, where I saw everyone in one day when I was 15. Were you still Hertfordshire-based then? Do you remember the Nordoff Robbins?
Yeah.
So, and then that, and I saw McCartney into Floyd. It was just bananas. And everyone from Tears for Fears through to, you saw the whole lot, the Armani lot in the peak Armani years of Clapton, Elton, Knopfler. And like when they were selling the guitars the other day, they were like, that's the one from Nebworth, I was thinking. Yes. So, yeah, awful. Awful.
But yeah, as you say, Here Comes the Sun with the inner light, with that tabla of Del Ruba from With Him, You Without You, and that sun. It's so lovely.
It's wonderful. And it's the Del Ruba playing the...
And really subtly,
and that's the magic, right?
Really subtly, you've got the bass line from I Want You, She's So Heavy. But it's really, really subtle.
Yes, really subtle. That's a clever one. And it's almost like, well, that makes up for... No, nothing makes up for Clapton clattering in and ruining Lady Madonna. Nothing will make up for that.
To be fair, I don't think he knew about it. But it would have been nice to have the whole song like that, just to give it something different, you know, rather than going straight into the normal version.
And do you know what's lovely? You can hear the Moog much clearer than the original.
Oh, it was a mix, yeah. The Abbey Road mix. Again, we've really only had the 1987 mixes, and we've also had the Yellow Submarine remix, which is the first proper remix, which to this day I think is one of the best remixes available. And, yeah, to hear it crystal clear like this, I remember at the time thinking, wow, that sounds so good.
Yeah, and is this, we got Come Together and Dear Prudence thrown in. Mm. I've asked what the R's from.
Oh, the O's and the R's are from, I think, from Oh Darling and Because.
Oh, okay.
But again, it's so, there's no information on these. But for me, that's what it sounds like. It's the R and the O. To Come Together, Dear Prudence, with Crybaby. Well, it says on the label, with Crybaby Cry transition, but it is in fact the Can You Take Me Back Where I Came From? Can You Take Me Back? Which, for me, I still don't consider it to be part of Crybaby Cry. I think it's a distinct thing between that and Revolution 9, but of course with CDs, it had to be tagged on one or the other.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so it's more homage than anything else.
Yeah.
It's a McCartney ditty. So on the cry, but we've got the descending Eleanor Rigby strings. Let me just get my vinyl copy. I kind of get lost with what's with what. It's got a lovely booklet with this. Did you get the vinyl?
Eventually, yeah.
Yeah, so it just says the inner light transition. Into Come Together, Dear Prudence. Is it pretty much straight ahead, Come Together?
Yeah, it's been remixed.
There's not much.
Yeah, but it does sound very good. It sounds a lot clearer.
Oh, yeah. I just think I enjoyed it. There's not much sort of hidden herbs and spices thrown in, are there?
No.
Within this. You say you want a revolution. Well, you know, we all want to change the world. You tell me that it's evolution. Well, you know, we all want to change the world.
When you say about the different versions, I mean, the next two tracks, Revolution and Back in the USSR, this was a bit of contention at the time because the CD version is much shorter than the DVD and iTunes versions. So
It
was a big thing at the time for CD because for me, I was fully into CDs at the time, and it took me a while to get back into vinyl. And I was thinking, oh, that's so unfair. You've got the full versions.
Well, there are famous moments of this, aren't there? Fleetwood Mac Tusk on the CD, Sarah, which is a 6-minute epic, is like 3.5 minutes because they'd gone over the 74 minutes or whatever the threshold was. And it was always Stevie that bought it because Silver Springs had to stay off rumours because of length restrictions with vinyl. So what is, sorry, what's shorter? Revolution's shorter, is it?
Back in the USSR and Revolution as well.
Okay.
So I haven't got the vinyl in front of me. How long is it on the vinyl version? Does it say?
Back in the USSR, doesn't actually give. It's quite wide.
It's a couple of centimetres longer.
Yeah. Oh, can I just say, I'm back in the USSR, the high guitar lead note on the final verse is the eighth wonder of the world. I always think it's such an you just wouldn't think to do it. It's out there.
In an age where, you know, everyone was doing these screaming guitar solos, he did what Pete Townsend did on I Can See for Miles. Just stay on the same note. Just do one note.
Yeah.
I'm not Hendrix, so have this.
No.
I love from the wings at the play you are staging, while my guitar gently weeps as I'm sitting here doing nothing but aging. Still my guitar gently weep.
One of the highlights, While My Guitar Gently Weeps.
Yeah, While My Guitar, I touched on it earlier, I much prefer the acoustic vibe. And it always feels like you're being a bit unfaithful by ever saying anything negative about the Beatles. But there's enough to go round. And it's George Martin's last string arrangement.
Yeah.
Which is lovely. He did the string arrangement on Grow Old With Me, because there's no definitive version of Grow Old With Me, which I still feel could have been astonishing. And I always actually thought the third song that George didn't want to do with Jeff Lynne was Grow Old With Me. Was that in the mix as well? Now we've got that.
Yeah, that was kind of thrown away immediately because it'd already been released.
Right, okay. So there's a Lennon anthology version with a George Martin arrangement, which I find quite twee and pastoral. You know, this is the man that did I Am the Walrus and Within You, Without You, like at his peak, was, you know, smashing down the doors of Abbey Road Studio 2 with invention and just glory and power. It's not as saccharine as I find the Grow Old With Me arrangement. And once you tie it into, you know, emotion and sentiment that it's his last thing. And a friend of mine worked with George probably in the 90s, and he was conducting something and a friend was recording it. And at the end of it, the whole audience were applauding, and George didn't know, apparently. His hearing had suffered so badly. So the fact that he's even doing this, but I don't know what his hearing was like towards the end. That was the 90s.
Well, there's stories, aren't there, of people meeting him, chatting away to him, and then Giles sort of leaning over saying, he can't hear you.
Yeah,
he's not
okay,
being rude.
Right, okay.
He can't hear you.
And the missing verse, the play that you're staging.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, this was originally it was going to be on the 1980s Sessions tape, so it's been doing the rounds for years. But I find it interesting, originally you had a proper ending, and George Harrison going, let's hear that back. And what they've done, they've looped the final two chords. Which is looped. And they've continued to do that version to this day. Any other version that's appeared since then continues to do that.
Yeah.
Next, Sugar Plum Fairy.
Sugar Plum Fairy.
Well, it's perfect, isn't it? Even John, when he was trashing everything he did in the Beatles, said this was okay, didn't he? He said, I think it's all apart from Day in the Life. But then he kind of damns it with faint praise. You know, he says, but it wasn't as good as I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
Because Sgt. Pepper's was the album for me. I mean, obviously, this is the last one. We had a really annoying dog next door called Freckles. And so I would frequently put the speakers for my record player out the bedroom window and see if the runoff groove, because I'd heard that it was a dog. Didn't do anything. I tried. Yeah. Oh, it's this was one that, you know, we were all excited to hear in acceptable Technicolor, as in just to bring out, because it's so dense that, then, you know, amazing that it was ever created with four tracks.
Oh, yeah.
That's it. Famously.
the version on this, it's just, again, a clearer remix. But at the end, where the orchestra rises up, they're simultaneously descending, which is a really weird effect. But it does, kind of works.
There aren't enough superlatives for the Day in the Life. I love Paul's piano playing on it. I think that's, if you can say something's unsung from it. I even like Burba Durba, which we've all got used to since Anthology. It's like...
Yes.
It's like... Yeah. And Mal, because obviously, you know, always knew of Mal, but Get Back meant you got a little window into Mal world, and him hitting the anvil is glorious. And the fact of, Mal, get an anvil, okay? Well, and then there he, dunk, dunk, hitting it. And then, because that, as a child, the counting was something that did come through on the original mixes. And I always wondered, that evoked things. All part of it. Wonderful.
I love about Mal as well, the fact that so many of us watched Get Back during lockdown, and it was like Mal was there helping us as well.
Yep.
He just had to help everybody. There's so much affection for him.
Have you ever looked online for an Apple Corp van?
Yeah.
I mean, are they the coolest thing on the planet?
Amazing,
Lecky, Leckie drove one once. I think someone, Jim Kerr, was telling me, because John Leckie did a handful of early Simple Minds records.
Yeah.
They talk about Beatles days. I think he said he drove one of them.
Really? Oh, wow.
It's like, he produced the Benz and, you know, and all of that, but he drove one of those Apple vans. Wow.
And then the penultimate track, Hey Jude, which
yes.
is, I think, inspired by Paul's live version.
Yeah, as I was saying earlier, I went to Nebworth 90. I was quite near the front. I was convinced he'd heard me because he used to do a little very Macca thing. Hey, there's a bit of the end of this one you might want to join in. If I was not upon a stage myself, I'd rather be. It's just sort of, oh, that's just brilliant. That's so Paul. And I was convinced because I shouted na na na, and on the clip you see him go and point at someone in the audience. It's clearly not me, but the 15-year-old me was convinced it was me because I had Tripping the Live Fantastic, so I knew what was coming up. I knew he was going to do I Was Not Upon This Stage. But yeah, that whole outro. I never did Hey Jude with the Cheatles. I did a click track for them after I'd left because we didn't have any keyboards or anything.
Oh, right.
It was very much just the early thing. Then when they'd play down south, I'd do a sort of drunk Billy Preston cameo, get up and do Get Back. So, yeah, it is crib from. So, the doo 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 doo. Where's that from? From the original, just that, not on.
Yeah, it was on. It was really subtle. So, it was literally one bar that's been looped
right
a lot. But it's during the right down in the fade out, right near the end of the fade out. Okay. But all they've done is loop it. It didn't go on for that long.
And there was a guitar part that Robbie McIntosh used to do on an Epiphone electric, na 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 na, over it. Which have they emphasised that a bit more this time?
Or is, Paul's I know been that doing that live used... version. Yeah, Paul's been doing that live version for so long, and I think they just we found this bit. We can mess around with it. And turn it to 90s Paul. So then we have doing its job again, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band reprise, leading into All You Need Is Love.
I've never been so disappointed as when I went to buy the 12-inch copy of All You Need Is Love in Woolworths in Red Hill with £3.49 from saved up from pocket money. Got it home and played it. It was just exactly the same. And I was probably 12. When were they? So that was late 80s? They reissued?
Yeah, that would have been 87.
They brought out All You Need Is Love. I don't know, what was that?
It was the 20th anniversary of all the singles. They released them all and had all the picture discs.
So 1987?
Yeah.
Right, okay. And so we'd have, and we're probably quite, we were having, it was 20 years ago today, documentaries and all of that, weren't we? I don't know what I was expecting, some sort of awful mega mix, some sort of jive bunny. Yeah. Should we go around the, when I used to buy 12 inches, when people wouldn't really celebrate the art of a remix, like I'd buy, wouldn't it be good? Nick Kershaw 12-inch, it would go chicka jerna, chicka jerna, chicka jerna, chicka, and that's basically it. And then it just play the, go into the middle eight just like for a bit and then go back out. But
I think my favourite, moving diversity slightly, my favourite ever 12-inch version is Lenny by Supergrass, which is basically the song, the same song, but all they've done is extended the beginning, the which goes on for about 8 minutes. And then it's just the normal song. It's so cheeky.
Oh, I'll have to check that out. We had Gaz Coombs was the support in Australia for a month.
Oh, yeah.
So I was away with Gaz for a month, which was, so I got to see him do Moving every night.
Oh, wow.
When then that man's incapable of singing not even a bum note, just even an imperfect note. It's just...
Oh, he's incredible singer.
Just wonderful. It's All You Need Is Love. Is it an unsung in Beatles canon? Has it been a bit forgotten? All You Need Is Love.
I don't know. Someone was on before saying about Sgt. Pepper, it was always at the top of all the charts in the 70s and 80s, and then it sort of people not forgot about it, but focused on the other ones. So maybe this is, yeah.
I know people that in the 90s, it suddenly became cool within the backdrop of Britpop to go, actually, Revolver's the best. Yes, yeah. Sgt. Pepper's is overrated, actually. It's a 6 out of 10 album. It's a 3-star album. But I was always like, oh, right, okay. But that'll probably be reevaluated now, because it's... I love it. And we get a bit of Ticket to Ride.
Yeah, during the fade out. Yeah, during the. I think it's basically designed to expand on the original words. She loves you, yeah, yeah, yeah. And I think the idea was, yeah, throw a few more of those in.
Yeah, so you get all sorts. Yeah. And then the Goodnight Strings. And then a Christmas album excerpt.
Yeah, it's the third is Johnny, Christmas record. Yeah.
The third one, right, okay.
Well, I mean, during the fade out, you hear parts of the guitar riff from Ticket to Ride, as you say. Then you've got Baby, You're a Rich Man, and Rain, which I quite like throwing in there.
Oh, right, just okay.
Rain.
Yeah.
And Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. But yeah, then you get the Good Night, and it is, John's, this is Johnny Rhythm saying good night to you, and God bless you. Which is a great ending.
Yeah.
Although, the digital version, you do have two extra tracks. Fool on the Hill and Girl. And I'd say they're worthy of a listen. But I think the Fool on the Hill, the most interesting thing is the opening. Uses elements of the recording to create a new intro, and there's a bit of Mother Nature's Son thrown in there. But it needs to end on All You Need Is Love.
Yeah, I've played this album a lot, and I've played it a lot with the kids in the car because I thought it was a good way of trying to get them into the Beatles. It's not actually worked. They don't play instruments either, so you can't. There's been enough lying around, when I've got however many guitars and things. But I think even when they were little, because my firstborn was born 2007 and second in 2010, so it's around the conception of this album as well. So I would play it a lot when they were kids, and it was just a wonderful introduction to them. For them, that they might thank me in their 20s when they suddenly become Beatleheads and listen to every back episode of I'm the Egg Pod. And as I say, I'm not a particularly reactionary person, but I've always rallied against people really slagging this record off. I just think, I think it's really important, and I think it heralded the remixes that we got, and it sounded great, and it just, I think, made people fall in love with them all over again, if that was possible.
Absolutely. Owen Parker, thank you so much.
Pleasure, thank you.
I played it there, Charlie. Okay, put the red lights off.
This is Johnny Rhythm just saying good night to you all, and God bless.